speaking live. Let's take a listen to what he's saying.
Be upon Hussein, may peace be upon Ali, the son of Hussein, and may peace be upon the children of Hussein and the friends of. Your brothers and your sisters, preserve them throughout the country during these nights and days, whereby you were commemorating the memory of the master of the martyrs, Abi Abdullah Hussein. May peace be upon him in an environment of danger and threats. And up until now, thank God, these days and these nights have passed. With God's mercy, they have passed well. They have passed safely. And we ask God that He complete His blessings and we can commemorate tonight and tomorrow and the remaining days of this immortal, beloved memory with His mercy and with His kindness. Also, at the beginning, we must express our thanks to all those who exerted efforts and also stayed awake during the latest nights and in the days as well, under the rain and under the sun, in order to provide security for all of these sermons and for all of these locations. We must thank, first and foremost, at the beginning, the Lebanese army and the security services, the official security services, and all of the brothers and sisters in Hezbollah and the Amal movement, and all different sides who sponsored and managed and protected and took responsibility in commemorating these nights and commemorating this occasion. Now, those who are in front, if they even if they don't sit down, I will continue speaking. I want all those to sit down. Now, if you can say salawat on the Prophet Muhammad. And with the available time, of course, as I said before, tonight we shall speak a bit about the political issues, and I will also speak about the current local situation, then the regional conflict, and there are some issues which, God willing, I will leave for tomorrow. The issue of the latest Israeli threats and what Al-Aqsa Mosque is being subject to and some other issues. These matters will be referred to tomorrow. Tonight, I want to speak about the local political situation and also the regional conflict and in the end, pledging our allegiance once again on this night, the night of the 10th day, pledging our allegiance to Hussein. Politically, there are a number of points. The first is related to the parliament. I will speak about the parliament and about the presidential elections and the events which took place in northern Lebanon, the army, the dialogue with the future movement, and also the situation in the region in general. There are details also which we will address as well, God willing. Thank you very much. Now, I really hope, please let me speak, and then, in the end, God willing, you can stand and chant slogans, but not as soon as we have some calm, then someone tries to heating up the situation again. I want you to listen very well so that we can take advantage of this night. I would like you to sit down. Now, first of all, the parliament. Now, the current parliament, its term ends soon. And the term for holding elections, this time frame, is getting narrower, is getting smaller. If we don't have elections and if the parliament's mandate is not extended, that means we have an institution which has been cancelled out, no longer functioning, or no longer present at the very least. There are three results, or three alternatives. We either go to elections, or we extend the mandate of the parliament, or we go to a power vacuum. Now, we are not up against two alternatives, either extension or vacuum. We have elections, an extension or vacuum. Now, if we go to elections, now we have a constitutional problem because there are very important parties amongst the Sunnis who don't want elections for their own reasons. Now, if we go to extension, we also have a constitutional problem because there are very important parties amongst the Christians who reject extension or will not assist in covering an extension. So, what to do? We can't hold elections, nor can we extend. That means we will go to a power vacuum. From our perspective, from day one, when this issue was raised, from Hezbollah's perspective specifically, we informed all our friends and allies and all those who communicated with us. We didn't speak about it a lot in the media. We said that if you want to hold elections, we are ready to hold elections. We are ready to hold elections. If you want to go to extension because of the security and unique circumstances in the country, we have no problem with an extension. What is natural, the natural step is to hold elections, but we have this problem. However, our stance is if you want elections, we are ready. We're relaxed. If you want elections, we are ready, and if you want an extension, we are ready as well. But what we are not ready for at all is for anyone deliberately or not deliberately to take the country to vacuum. Bearing in mind that unfortunately the accusations of taking the country to a power vacuum is always made against us, but we are innocent of this accusation. Sometimes they say we want a vacuum because this is in our interest. Some say we want it because we want to hold a constitutional conference, but what we reject is to go to a power vacuum. That is something completely, that's something which we are completely against. However, now, of course, these days indeed, we do have such a situation. I believe that we have reached a very sensitive point, which the parliament now, the fate of a parliament, rests on this current phase, and I think it will require a lot of wisdom from Parliament Speaker Nabih Birri, and we, all of us, the parliamentary blocs, we are all concerned with giving assistance to Parliament Speaker Birre in order for the country to come out of a very difficult situation, because such a power vacuum will be a very harsh strike if we add it to the presidential vacuum. That is the first issue. The second, I will try and be brief in all different themes so that we can talk about all issues. The second is the presidential elections. Now, of course, in the country, every side accuses the other of being responsible for preventing the election of a president. I don't want to enter into this argument, but I believe, and this is something which we said from day one, we are fair. And tonight there is more than one subject which I want to speak fairly about, as I always should be. Now, fairness says that nobody in the country wants a presidential vacuum. If anyone plans to do this, of course, this is something nobody wants. Of course, there is nobody who thinks about this issue, and we don't accuse anyone in the other parties of also taking such an approach. Everyone wants, as soon as possible, to have a president. Now, we always need to give our perspective. Over the previous period, we heard that this file of the president is no longer in the hands of the Lebanese, and it has become a regional file in the hands of regional players. Now, tonight, I call on the political factions in Lebanon to exert efforts in order to retake the file from the regional powers. Let's take it back, Lebanese, and work on it as Lebanese. As usual, I want to be frank and speak and name everything. When we say regionally, who do we mean? Practically, there are a number of regional countries who, whether they like it or not, they are concerned with the presidential file in Lebanon. There are some of these regional countries who are our friends and our allies from our camp, and there are some of these regional countries who are the allies and friends of the other side in Lebanon. Let's try and dismantle this file. Can we retrieve this file and make it once again a national file, irrespective of the problems and the challenges regionally? Can we do this or not? We, from our side, I would like to say very honestly tonight that from our perspective, it's solved. No, the regional countries have no role in complicating the situation. Who do we have? We have Iran and Syria. Syria, despite the fact that it's preoccupied with its internal events, but from day one, the Syrian leadership said that what its allies in Lebanon agree to and what the resistance agrees to, Syria will agree to. So it's local, it's from our perspective. Syria said that I, from my perspective as a neighboring country, if someone asks me my opinion, I accept what my allies accept. What makes the resistance rest reassured and satisfies it is okay for me. Now, let's go to Iran. Iran, many of the politicians and the political factions in Lebanon communicated with the Iranian ambassador in Beirut. Some visited Tehran and met with the Iranian officials, and some made European countries as mediators, like France and others. The Iranian brothers, the Iranian officials, told all sides that this is a Lebanese internal issue. Whatever the Lebanese agree upon, we don't intervene. And in the end, the Islamic Republic of Iran is concerned. What concerns it is for these elections to take place and for the resistance to be reassured and confident. So the ball is in our court. We, as a political faction regionally, we're comfortable regarding Iran and Syria. Neither Syria nor Iran are demanding anything from anyone in this world on account of facilitating the presidential election, some people said that regarding Iran, Iran links this issue with the Iranian nuclear dossier. Those people don't know anything about the Iranian nuclear negotiations. Iran rejects to discuss anything else besides its nuclear program, whether it be the presidency in Lebanon, nor Iraq, nor Yemen, nor Bahrain, nor Syria, nor Afghanistan, nor Azerbaijan, or anything. Iran is focusing its dialogue, and from a stance of wisdom and strength, it focuses on the nuclear issue, and it rejects being blackmailed on account of its allies in order to facilitate the nuclear issue. Now, what remains is you. You solve your problems. You, meaning the March 14, you have a problem, which is that in your regional camp, you usually say, we have no problem with this person or that person. But, for example, our colleagues in Saudi Arabia aren't accepting. Okay, solve this. I say tonight, our camp has the internal national decision in its own hands, and we have a regional mandate. Do you have such a decision? Do you have a regional mandate? Can you take a decision without anyone placing a veto from here or from there? This is something which should be achieved at this phase. So if the local factions want to hold a dialogue amongst themselves regarding the presidency, the natural introduction in order for such a dialogue to be successful is that these factions would be freed from the regional vetoes and from the regional wills so that we can reach a result. Second point, which is related to the presidency, is that from our perspective, yes, we support a certain candidacy, and the whole world knows this candidacy, it's not hidden. And in public and also in private, it's well known, and this candidacy enjoys the best Christian representation and best national representation if you compare it with the other candidacies and the possible candidacies. Now, some say in order to facilitate the presidential elections, you must abandon this candidacy or your support for this candidacy. That's not fair. It's not normal. We have a problem in Lebanon. This problem is that if we want to go along with the general Christian mood and get the best Christian representation for the presidency, which is a national post first and foremost, and second a Christian, then we're accused of disrupting the process and we are requested and demanded to abandon this moral, logical, political choice. And if we do abandon, we as Muslims and as Muslim parliamentary blocs, if we agree to a president who the Christians don't believe to really represent them, what does this mean? This means we are cancelling the Christian role. This means we are frustrating the Christians and eliminating them, and we are conspiring against the only Christian president in the East. So this is a problem. How should we address this? We address it by dialogue and by communicating, not by turning our backs, nor by relying on regional and international changes. And I'd like to tell all of the Lebanese and the Lebanese political factions, if you are waiting for regional and international changes, then you will wait for a long time, because the region has now entered into conflicts which they all are saying will continue for years. Do you want the presidency in Lebanon to remain empty for years? If you don't want this, then let there be national, internal, serious efforts, and the main essential dialogue, we are all ready to be part of this dialogue. However, the main part of this dialogue should be with the natural candidate that our camp supports. We all know him, and his name is Michel Aoun. This is the path. So we must not wait the events and the developments in the region and the world. We must not wait for them. We must retrieve the presidential election file. We must retrieve it from the regional players so that it can be once again an internal local decision. Now the second part is the events in the north, and from there I will then speak about the army and then the dialogue with the local Lebanese political factions. There is no doubt that Lebanon over the past few days, God helped Lebanon survive a very difficult period. And anyway, according to the information which we have and the investigations that have been conducted, it is now clear the size of the plot which was being drawn for Tripoli and the north, and within what vision and what plan and in communicating with who. I don't want to repeat this, you all monitored it, and as time goes by, as the investigations continue and as the documents are uncovered, all of these issues will be uncovered completely. And I thank God, God prevented Lebanon from falling into a catastrophe. And the north, there is no doubt that he who took the biggest burden in this confrontation, in confronting this challenge and this danger, was the Lebanese army. Its leadership, its generals, its soldiers, its martyrs, and its wounded. The Lebanese army, be it on the battlefield or at the media and political level, the army put up with a lot of accusations and insults from here and there. However, the army continued with its efforts and took its natural responsibility and succeeded. And here we stress on our confidence and our faith and our belief, which we always expressed, that the Lebanese army, together with the official security services, however, the Lebanese military institution first and foremost, represents the real guarantee for Lebanon's cohesion, for Lebanese civil peace, for the remaining existence of the state, whatever be the nature of the state. And there is no alternative to the Lebanese army in this issue when it comes to preserving security and stability and national cohesion and defending the state. And we also, in order to push away any suspicions, the resistance never did we present ourselves as a party who was responsible for civil peace and security and stability. Security-wise, yes, politically, all the Lebanese are responsible. So therefore, this army, which proved itself in more than one confrontation and in more than one dangerous challenge, this army is capable of assuming this responsibility when the political and popular support is provided, and when also the capabilities are provided, and when more human resources are being supplied to the Lebanese army. And here, of course, we must always salute the institution that is sacrificing and expressing its loyalty on this night. We must focus on this, on the night of the Ashura. And also at the same time, in order to be fair, and here, listen, we will speak logically and fairly. Fairness says that the main factor which contributed in overcoming in the north and Lebanon, overcoming this big catastrophe, was the stance of the people of Tripoli and the people of the north in general, and especially the religious clerics and the politicians and the political leaders and the political factions, the ulama, the well-known personalities in the Sunni, amongst the Sunnis in Lebanon, were it not for this national, honorable, clear, decisive stance from all of these sides, from all of these Sunni leaders, then the situation in the north and in Tripoli would have taken a completely different direction. Whether these officials or these politicians belong to our political camp or the others, we must mention, of course, we are expressing our high admiration for this stance. First of all, we say that this stance played a decisive role in saving Lebanon from what was being prepared for it. And we also highly admire this stance and this behavior and this performance. We must highly admire as well the stance of the Prime Minister and also the Mufti of Lebanon and all of the political leaders and the former Prime Ministers. And of course, we must also say that the biggest, most important role was for the future movement and for the leadership of the future movement. Tonight, I'm speaking in accordance with my ethics, Al-Husseini ethics. We disagree in many stances, in a lot of analysis and evaluation internally and regionally. And sometimes we might reach the stage whereby we are rivals or even enemies. However, our ethics tell us, ethics which we were taught by Ahl al-Bayt and by our Prophet and by the friends of the Prophet, may peace be upon them all, we were taught that when there is a right stance, an honorable stance, a national stance which serves the public interest, we must mention this and we must thank that side and express our appreciation. Irrespective of all of our disagreements and all of our other arguments, and irrespective of everything which was said about the previous events in Tripoli, maybe we will be convinced even more that here you made mistakes, here you didn't, for example. Let's put all this aside. At this current period, this very sensitive, important phase in the history of Lebanon, situation, and when it takes such a national stance, maybe some might say it's their interest. Yes, this is in the interest of the people of Tripoli and the people of the north and the future movement and the Sunnis in Lebanon. However, it is also in the interest of all of the Lebanese and the state in Lebanon and the future of Lebanon. There's no problem in this regard. Now, in this perspective, in the media, we saw some calls being made to hold dialogue. I don't want to comment on what is being said in the media, because if someone wants to make a dialogue, he can't, for example, begin to insult him and in the end say, I'm ready to hold dialogue. He can't curse him and then say, we can hold dialogue. In the media, some say that there are invitations issued to you on the media, but you don't respond and you turn a deaf ear. But if you want to listen, you should say, my dear brother, we disagree. We speak with one another in a respectful way. We disagree locally, regionally, and in our alternatives and our choices. However, it's clear, if we want to protect the country, if we want to fortify the country, we must speak with one another. Let's talk to one another. Then I will say, okay, if such an approach is taken. But let's leave the media, what is said on the media, for the media. Because, you know, in the media, sometimes we see some people who are trying to score points and take advantage in order to take some leadership roles here or there. For example, we are in a sensitive period, so overcome this, but I can say to you and to the Lebanese and all those who are listening tonight that yes, over the past few days, there are some allies and there are some friends who spoke to us, irrespective of the media, and they said, hasn't the time come for dialogue between Hezbollah and the Future Movement? And we said, we don't have any problem. We are ready. Anything which protects the country and fortifies the country and puts the country together, we are ready. We are a people of dialogue. We have logic. We have a cause. And we are ready. We are a people of dialogue. We have logic. We have a cause. And we are not afraid. The weak are the ones who run away from dialogue and are afraid of dialogue. And the very fact that the Lebanese would sit down together and the whole dialogue, this serves Lebanon interests. And here from this podium, I announce that we are ready for such a dialogue, and this remains an issue which should be followed. Now we go back to the army. Can I take one moment? We support all forms of support for the Lebanese army so that it can carry out its responsibilities. And within this context, we saw the Iranian grant, the military grant from the Islamic Republic of Iran. Previously, it was said that Iran never provided, it never assisted, and Iran only had made some general statements, but the Iranians then said, if that's the situation, we have been talking for years, and we spoke with the President and the Prime Minister, with the Minister of Defense, and with the other officials, so if it's required for us to come and to show a document and sign it, we're ready. Then a high-ranking Iranian delegation came and held discussions with the Lebanese and said, we're ready to provide a military grant. Of course, this grant will be a gateway or the beginning for more important continuing Iranian military grants. Go ahead, we're ready. And the equipment and the arms and the ammunition which will be within this grant are ready. If the Lebanese government agrees, the plane will come and bring them to Beirut's airport. Then we saw some arguments in the country. Some said, no, how can we accept a grant from Iran? They took it to the political angle, to the regional perspective, although from the beginning the Iranian officials said that this grant is without any preconditions. We don't have any conditions. Come and take it as you want. But they politicized this issue, and they also put it within the legal framework and the Security Council. But these are just false excuses, empty excuses. But tonight, I want to speak very clearly. Some Lebanese officials spoke with us. They said, do you want to create a problem in Lebanon and with the Lebanese government regarding the Iranian grant to the army? What we said, I will say to you tonight. We said, no, we don't want to create a problem. We don't want to create a problem, nor do we want to create a crisis or anything. And I will say officially today to the Lebanese government, which is concerned with answering, if you, the Lebanese government, if you want to accept this grant, then this is an interest for Lebanon and for the Lebanese army, and it will open the door for serious assistance. Because here, look, there are no sales, there is no buying, there are no investors, there are no mediators, no money. There is just weapons, missiles, ammunition. Come, take them and leave. It will be clean, 100%. If you want to go ahead with this clean operation that supports the Lebanese army, okay. If you find that you're in a corner internally with some of the political factions regionally, with some of the regional countries, if you're in a corner with the Americans, for example, with anyone, we don't want to put you in a corner. And Iran, by the way, isn't putting pressure in any way. One is giving you a grant and then he wants to put pressure on you to accept the grant. Never had this happened in history. Iran wants to help. It doesn't want to put anyone in a corner in Lebanon. And we also, as a Lebanese faction, part of the government and part of Lebanon's political landscape. We don't want to corner anyone. Take as much time as you want. Discuss it as much as you want. If you want to agree to this grant, say you agree. If you don't want it, you're free, but you're the losers. You lose. There's no problem. That's the situation regarding the Iranian grant. The other point is regarding the Lebanese soldiers who have been kidnapped. Although we're not speaking about this issue on the media, because from day one we said that this is the responsibility of the government, and we, as Hezbollah, because of our unique situation, our participation in the fighting in Syria and the sensitivity of the armed groups towards us, we would prefer that we don't speak about this issue on the media in order for it not to be taken advantage of against those who are kidnapped. And I want to assure all of those kidnapped, especially the families of those who have been kidnapped by the terrorist groups, I want to assure them that this issue is in our minds and our hearts and in the minds and hearts of all the Lebanese. And I am aware and I know that the Lebanese government is seriously following this issue. It is complicated. Some try to simplify the issue, but it's complicated, especially if the opposing side, which is the armed groups, do not commit to the simplest conditions of successful negotiations. The most basic condition is secrecy, keeping the negotiations secret. When the armed groups uncover everything in the media and uncover the negotiations to the media, this makes us doubt. Do they really want to reach results and solve this issue, or are they trying to take advantage of the kidnapped soldiers to remain present on the media and blackmail the politicians and provoke in the country? But anyway, the government is seriously following the matter, and we know this, and I call on the families of the Lebanese kidnapped soldiers to be more patient, to put up more with the difficulty, to also support more the Lebanese government, because in such a complicated issue, it requires cohesion and cooperation in order to reach the appropriate result or the appropriate end. One more topic related to the local situation before I speak about the region. I call on the Lebanese government, which is of course preoccupied with the security issue, with the refugees and the displaced, all of the files which lead to pressure. I call on them not to neglect the social issues of Lebanon, the basic issues, the daily life issues of Lebanese. We have Lebanese who are under pressure, and the only side which is capable and is concerned, the only side which is concerned and is capable of addressing such issues is only the state, only the government. Now, the political factions or the movements, whatever they do, however much they do to fill in the vacuum or provide assistance or exert efforts, these efforts will be very modest compared to the size of the social problems and the daily life problems which many Lebanese are suffering from. The government should not behave as if it's a caretaker government or a government for managing emergency situations. It should be a government which has complete authority and assumes complete responsibility so that we can continue in confronting all of these hardships in the country. Regarding the regional situation, before I end, now, in the region, I want to say something and I will leave the rest till tomorrow, God willing. We always hear, in Lebanon and in the region, and even the Americans and some of the European and Western study centers and institutions try and focus on this point, which is that in the region today we have conflicts, big dangerous conflicts, military, security, political challenges, dangers, and there are countries being destroyed. What do they say? How do they describe this conflict? How do they understand it? They say this is a Sunni-Shia conflict. and that the current conflict in the region is a Sunni-Shia conflict, and the conflict in Lebanon is a Sunni-Shia conflict, and therefore some of the leaders or some sides who are not Sunni nor Shia could consider themselves not concerned with the conflict, and therefore they should have a different stance. This is a big mistake which is being committed against the region and the people of the region and against the reality of what is taking place in the region. Listen, my brothers and sisters, usually when someone is suffering from a disease and you want to treat this disease, shouldn't you know what this disease is? What is his problem? You take him to a doctor, a general doctor. He tries to identify, but if it's a problem in the stomach, you take him to a doctor specialized in the stomach. If it's eyes, you take him to an eye surgeon or an eye doctor. If it's in nerves, you take him to a doctor specialized in nerves. The problem is in identifying. We must identify the problem. For years they continue, and then you find that the problem lies elsewhere. The same goes in political crises. When we speak about a conflict, the problem is in understanding the nature of the conflict, in identifying what the problem is about. This only prolongs the treatment, it prevents the treatment. I'll give you an example. We have a village in Lebanon which has Muslims and Christians, and there are families, children from this family, children from that family, and they've lived with each other for hundreds of years, and those Muslims belong to a certain political movement and the Christians belong to another political movement. Then the youth from those Christians fought with the Muslims in this village, an individual problem. One person wants to go before the other, and they began to fight. We had a problem in the village. If we want to identify this problem in the village, is it a problem between individuals, between these youth who fought for silly reasons, or is it a family problem with its background? For example, are there some feuds? It just so happens that this family is Muslim and that family is Christian, but there are all problems. The youth took advantage of it and began to fight. A family problem or no? Is it a sectarian problem because they are Muslims and they're Christians and they fought each other? Or no? Is it a political problem because this person belongs to this political movement and that person to that political movement, and these two political movements are rivals, and the problem then was reflected or was translated in the village? It's very different if it's political, sectarian, individual. The way we identify the problem, this is what takes us to the solution. We say it's an individual problem and the politicians come and intervene, but it's a silly issue. It's between individuals. Why? Because we thought it was political. Sit down and put together a central committee. What is happening now in the region is just like that. All of the people, I'm not saying this just to waste time, you and all those listening to the people of the region, this is our fate. Nobody can say that what's taking place in the region doesn't concern me, or doesn't concern you, or doesn't concern her or him, because what is taking place in the region will draw the fate. The region, big conflicts in the region, doesn't it require for us to come down, come and see what this conflict really is? It's so easy to say it's a Sunni Shia conflict. That's a big mistake. And if we go ahead and take a look, is it true? For example, in one village where all the inhabitants are Shia, if they fight each other from two families, can you say that this is a sectarian conflict? No. It's a conflict between individuals, between families. Yes. If there's more than one sect, you might have such doubts. Let's take a look. The conflict now in the region, is it a Sunni Shia conflict? Let's take examples. Quick examples. Let's take a look at Libya. In Libya, now we have two fronts inside Libya who are fighting. and one of them is bombing the other from the air, and they are launching missiles against one another, and they are carrying out suicide operations against one another, and homes are being destroyed, hundreds of people killed and wounded, and the war is in more than one city in Libya. And each of these two Libyan sides is supported by a certain regional camp. Regional camp from here and regional camp from there. Where are the Shia? Where is the Sunni-Shia conflict here? The conflict between these two regional blocks in Libya, I'm speaking very frankly. We have a Turkish-Qatari block supporting one group in Libya. We have a Saudi Emirati block supporting another group in Libya. So tell me, where is the Sunni-Shia conflict here between these two blocks in Libya? Where is the Shia? Where are the Shia in Libya who are part of a Sunni-Shia conflict? This is an important country, beloved people who suffered a lot under the rule of Gaddafi, and they were waiting for a happy, dignified life. But now we have this catastrophe. Can you describe this as a Sunni-Shia conflict? No. What's Sunni-Shia got to do with it? That's number one. When the examples become more and more, then it's clear that the description is wrong. They say that the problem is that all of people of family are tall. The first is short, the second, the third is short. So that problem isn't that they're all tall. Let's look at Egypt, for example. There's a big problem in Egypt, in the country as a whole, in politics, elections, in the protests, and there is also fighting in the Sinai Peninsula between the Egyptian army and some armed groups. Now, in this display, I don't want to take a stance and say this person is right or that person is right. I'm describing what we are witnessing in the region. This is Egypt. Where are the Shia in Egypt? Where is the Sunni-Shia conflict in Egypt? There are certain political factions who are in conflict politically, and they are all Sunnis, and the confrontations in the Sinai Peninsula between the Egyptian army and the armed groups. Where's the Sunni-Shia conflict? At the same time, what is taking place in Egypt is important and very dangerous, not just for Egypt, but for the whole region. Sometimes I speak about a political bloody conflict in an isolated country, and other times we speak about a country which represents half of the Arabs, which lies right in the heart of the Middle East. This conflict is not Sunni-Shia, and it's one of the most important forms of conflict in the region. But you're not taking it into consideration in your description. Now, let's get closer. Let's refer to Syria. Some people might say that the confrontation, the conflict with the government is sectarian. That's not true. But fighting ISIL and al-Nusra, the long bloody fighting whereby thousands have been killed and wounded, is it a Sunni-Shia conflict? The confrontation between al-Nusra and the other armed Syrian opposition groups, the last of which was in Idlib and in Jabal al-Zawiya, and the raids and the suicide operations between al-Nusra and the so-called Syrian Revolutionaries Front, is this a Sunni-Shia conflict? The confrontation in Ain al-Arab Kobani, which kept the whole region and world preoccupied, and the international coalition wakes up, we sleep at night, we wake up in the morning and we hear that the international coalition is bombing in Kobani. Is the fighting in Kobani a Sunni-Shia conflict? The Kurds against ISIL. If you want to look at it from the sectarian angle, there are no Shia, according to my knowledge, there's no Shia in Ain al-Arab. Now, targeting the Christians in Iraq and in Syria, to the extent whereby we have genocide, is this a Sunni-Shia conflict? No. What are the Christians to do with a Sunni-Shia conflict? Also, genocide against the Yazidis, the minorities, does it have anything to do with a Sunni-Shia conflict? In Iraq, the ISIL attack against Kurds towards Erbil? Does it have anything to do with a Sunni-Shia conflict? Most of the Kurds in Iraq are Sunnis. So when the whole world broke loose and the international coalition was formed, why? Because ISIL threatened Jordan and threatened Saudi Arabia and threatened Kuwait. And these are countries, sectarian-wise, they are Sunni countries. What does this have to do with the Sunni-Shia conflict? Now, when we find that the biggest part of the conflict reaching the regional conflicts between countries, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, the Emirates, it reached the level whereby they insulted each other at the podium of the UN, and we all follow this. What does this have to do with the Sunni-Shia conflict? I'm repeating the expression to underscore the idea that this identification is wrong. It's wrong to identify the problem in such a way. What is the best way? What is taking place in the region is a political conflict. Completely political. There are some countries and some political factions and some popular factions who have a certain vision regarding the future of their country and their region, and they are fighting or struggling in order to achieve this project, be it whether it's a right or wrong project. It's not sectarian. It just so happens that in one place the two sides are Sunnis, and in another place we have people who are Sunnis and others who are mixed but include the Shia. Does it make it a Sunni-Shia conflict? No, not at all. The axis which we belong to now and which we are fighting in, and we are helping. Only towards the Shia, towards Sunnah, Sunnis, Druze, and all of these sects, anyone but them. That's their mindset. Of all, we must understand and realize, all of us, and this requires efforts, cultural efforts, media efforts. Be transformed into a Sunni-Shia conflict. So I have a few words to say to the Shia, to the Sunnis, and to the Christians. Our battle, our fight.
Hezbollah Secretary General, they're talking to us live from Beirut. You're listening to the words he had to say about the conflict in the Middle East, that it is not a sectarian conflict between Shia and Sunnis. And he mentioned some regions, such as Libya, such as Kobani, that is not a sectarian conflict. Initially, he started talking about the internal politics of Lebanon, that he's against the power vacuum when it comes to the fate of parliament. Either vote or an extension would suffice. Also on the presidential elections, he said that this should not compound that problem. Regional countries have no role in the internal politics of Lebanon. On Iran's grant or aid, militarily speaking, he said that came with no strings attached, even though some people like to make a political issue out of it. Basically, some of the highlights. We'll give you more in our further news bulletins. At this point, do stay with us. We're going to give you news and brief of the top of the hour. And then after that, we're going to have the debate about the EU and UK in particular, and all of you as to how it stands. So bye-bye for now.